Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. Now, I am probably a lot like you. I am a very casual college basketball fan, but when the schedule turns to March, that's when I get interested, that's when I get invested, and that's when I start betting on college basketball games, tournaments, NCAA tournament, whatever's out there, I'm betting on it because I love watching college basketball this time of year. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code MANIX. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code MANIX. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, so on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being miserable, 10 being super happy, how happy are you to be sitting here in Los Angeles right now and not in Las Vegas?
Miserable. I can't wait to get on a flight. I can't wait to get to Vegas, baby. Vegas.
Sergio Mora is here.
By the way, Mannix, I'm interrupting
can
you.
Can I do my intro?
Can I interrupt you, please?
Well, you just did, so.
When you introduce me, I want your editors to put some triumphant music for my entrance, like trumpets blaring like a king is entering.
Okay. We'll do it there. Sergio Mora is here. Former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, contender winner, Vegas legend. You do pretty well in Vegas. I don't know how. You claimed to have a system. You explained your system to me last time we were in Vegas, which is effectively play red during the day and black at night, which something is not
like
a system.
No, something like that. Dostoevsky, Fyodor Dostoevsky, the Mad Russian, the Gambler, read that book and it'll give you the roulette strategy.
All right, the great Dostoevsky is giving Sergio gambling advice in Vegas. I love that. We will be in Vegas later on today. We're in Los Angeles because we will be at the Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia workout, or actually the Devin Haney workout in Los Angeles a little bit later in the day on Friday. It's funny, Sergio, I was just thinking like a month ago, if you had asked me the percentage chance that the Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia fight was going to happen, I would have said like 30%, 35%, but here we are like 2 weeks out. And it seems like this fight is going to take place at the Barclays Center on April 20th. Are you surprised that we're here, that this fight's going to happen?
No, I'm not surprised because there's a lot of money on the line. A lot of money on the line. You know, two huge promoters are on board. Networks are on board. So when there's that much, you know, to riding on it, you can't just risk it on a couple of concerning tweets on Ryan Garcia's part, because other than that, he looks in good shape.
It's more though than a couple of concerning tweets, though. Like
okay,
he
a lot
was,
of things. Okay, but you're not going to cancel a fight on tweets. What else has he done? Has he broken the law?
Has he not broken the law?
I mean, there's been boxers that have actually broken the law and still fought.
Lots of them. Yes,
many of them. Basketball players too, by the way. So yeah, this is a fighter that's, you know, deep into his spirituality, religion, predicting like he's Nostradamus. By the way, there was an earthquake today in New York. I think Ryan Garcia predicted it. either way, that's not concerning enough for them to cancel the fight. It's a mega event. The kid sells, and it's going to do well.
It is going to do well. I am, though, surprised that we're here because it's not just him throwing out a couple of tweets. I mean, this was to the point where the New York State Athletic Commission, according to Ryan Garcia, was asking for a mental competency test. So you know if they were asking for a mental competency test, there were legitimate concerns. But here we are, 2 weeks out. Ryan Garcia says he's ready. Devin Haney says he's ready. So we are going to get that fight on April 20th. Before we talk about the fight card we have this weekend, I wanted to get your take on one of the controversies of last weekend. Last weekend, we had Sebastian Vendora upsetting Tim Zhu to win the unified 154-pound title. The controversy in that fight is that in the second round, due to an accidental clash of heads and elbows, Tim Zhu suffered a nasty cut on the top of his head, a cut that bled for the rest of the fight, clearly changed the outcome of that fight. Tim Zhu was dominating the first two rounds of that fight, wound up losing a split decision after that. The question I have for you, as a former fighter, is should the corner of Tim Zhu have stopped that fight? If they had stopped that fight after the third round, it would have gone to a no contest, which would have been a disappointing outcome, but it wouldn't have put their fighter at risk of exactly what happened. So I've heard ex-fighters like Tim Bradley criticize the corner of Tim Zhu. I have criticized the corner of Tim Zhu. What do you say about whether or not the corner should have stopped that fight?
Former champion to you, Chris Mannix. Don't be relegating my
Tim Bradley's also a former status. Champion, so let's...
Yeah,
not,
but he said former fighter. All right, so check yourself, okay. Former
writer.
Can we
get to the point?
Yes, I would be furious if I was Tim Zhu because he did the brave thing. You know, he took a fight where nobody in their right mind would have went from fighting an older former champion in Keith Thurman to a 6'7" southpaw with a 9-inch reach advantage and 9 inches in height. Who does that? You get a good fighter with a respectable name, a top contender to save the date. I get it. It happens all the time. He still probably would have looked bad, but he wouldn't have got an elbow on the top of the head by a fighter that's 9 inches taller and a southpaw. I mean, everything. If you can design the perfect nightmare opponent, it's Sebastian Vendora, and Tim Zhu decided to take on that nightmare in 11 days notice. That shows you the kind of fighter throwback mentality that Tim Zhu is, but it's also stupid. And I'm going to say it right now because now he's not a champion. And now we got a new unified champion. That's where calculated risks and matchmaking and saying no to your team and to the network and to whoever else is in charge. No, it's a very important word. I've said it many times in my career and I've been almost blackballed by promoters and networks. But no is very important, man. You got to tell your kids no. You got to tell your trainer no. You got to tell everybody around you no. This is your life, your career, and you only have one of it. Look, at Tim Tszyu right now would have been a world champion. He would have been in line to fighting one of the big dogs at 154. Millions on the line. Now, he took two or three steps back and has to heal from a nasty cut, and he's not the champion anymore. This is a huge misstep on Tim Tszyu's part and team and his corner for not stopping that fight. It should have been a no contest. After that cut in the second round, they should have let the referee know, hey, listen, too much blood is pouring into the fighter's face. It's getting in the way of the vision, which it did. It's not a lie. There's been fights stopped for way lesser injuries, way lesser cuts. This is a world championship fight. You needed to do the right thing. That corner messed up, and Tim Tszyu should be furious, furious at his team and his trainer for not calling him out on that, because now he's not the champ. Now he takes a back seat, and it's going to be a long time till he gets that chance again.
Yeah, I understood letting him go out there after the second round, just to see if he could do it over one round, but he lost that third round. And after that third round, seeing the cut just pour blood, you know, over the course of that round, I mean, both those guys were just, yeah, after one round of bleeding, they were both crimson, right? Like, the corner should have recognized that this cut wasn't going to get better and that it was going to cause Tim Tszyu to have to fight differently. It was going to negatively affect him. So they opened the door for Sebastian Fundora to take advantage, and he did, to his credit. Like, he threw a lot more jabs than we've seen Fundora throw, but I think Tim Tszyu's corner deserves the criticism that they're getting because of this. They dropped the ball here. And I think other trainers, maybe even your trainer, other more experienced trainers.
It's happened to me too, by the way. In that Manfredo rematch, I got two cuts in my both of my eyes by the second rounds, and I was bleeding profusely. That was only an 8-round fight, and my trainer didn't stop that fight either, and I barely squeaked out a split decision. But if I would have lost, I would have probably been mad at my trainer for not stopping that fight. So everything's hindsight, 2020, looking backwards, but They, meaning the corner, Tszyu corner, needed to protect their champion. This is not a fighter. This is not a contender. That was a champion in line to make millions of dollars to be an international star, not only in Australia, but all over. I mean, he has that legacy of a last name with the great Kostya Tszyu. So this was a huge misstep, and I think Tim Tszyu should be furious because it's going to take a long time for him to climb back up to championship status and win another championship.
So there are ripple effects to the Fundora win, and it begins with the fact that Sebastian Fundora is not going to be ready to fight probably till November, December. He is suspended by the Nevada Commission, has a broken nose, and some of the reports indicate that Fundora won't even start training again until late September. So that puts a lot of pieces back on the board. You've got Terrence Crawford, who is the mandatory for the WBO version of Fundora's titles. And I want to go there, Sergio, because we have not seen Terrence Crawford in the ring since July of last year. He has been waiting for a big opportunity. Chase Canelo Alvarez around for a little bit. That didn't work out. It sure doesn't sound like Jermell Charlo is going to work out. Crawford was certainly hoping for the opportunity to fight Fundora for two belts at 154, but now that opportunity is gone, at least until December. What does Terrence Crawford do in a situation like this? Does he wait for Sebastian Fundora to heal and potentially be out for 18 months? Or is there another opponent out there that makes sense for Terrence Crawford?
No, you know, whenever you're one of the best fighters in the world, like Bud Crawford is, coming off one of the biggest, most anticipated fights of the year or the last 20 years in Errol Spence, he's allowed to have a gimme fight. And by gimme doesn't mean it's going to be an easy fight. Just it's not going to be a star mega fight pay-per-view. So I think that's what Terrence Crawford should do. You know,
But he wants to get paid.
I understand that, but he's 36 years old and time is not on his side. So
you can't have both, though. You can't have a gimme fight and
you can't have a gimme and get paid. Exactly. So he has to actually accept that. So by gimme doesn't mean a tomato can. It's still going to be a tough fight. I'm thinking more, you know, like a top contender that's already lost, an Alexis Rocha type. Rocha was in line. You know, he won his last fight. He's active. That I think
there
that fight
$0 in an Alexis Rocha fight.
But
like that's $0.
That's a fight that can make sense. It's a mandatory. Or you can go
well,
on.
No, it's not a mandatory anymore because Rocha
not anymore,
lost
but
Dion.
It was, and or you can go to the opposite side of that. beat the guy that just beat Rocha, Santillan. That would actually be very interesting. I would love to see Buck Crawford and Giovanni Santillan. For the boxing fans, that would be a really exciting fight considering what Santillan just did to Rocha. It'll be a respectable stay busy fight, and it's a fight that Bud can not only win, but shut a lot of people up in taking a tough mandatory against an undefeated fighter.
Yeah, Santillan. Well, Santillan's got a fight scheduled now for May 18th. He's going to fight Brian Norman in kind of a homecoming fight for Santillan. But
if Bud Crawford winks his way, you can bet
probably. Yeah, I would think that. But I don't think Bud Crawford wants a fight like that. It's not a pay-per-view fight. And if it's not a pay-per-view fight, you can't get the kind of dollars that he has been insisting that he gets to get back into the ring. I think the opposite, Sergio. I think... If you're Bud Crawford, you want big fights from here on out. The biggest fight at welterweight is Boots Ennis. We both agree on that. Like, Boots is out there. He is, he already has one of the belts that Bud relinquished, the IBF
version. That's not a popular fight, though, man. It's for the pay-per-view wise.
You think Santillan
is? No, but that's not going to be the dollars fight that you're talking about. The pay-per-view numbers, Boots doesn't bring that to the table.
There is no pay-per-view fight for Terrence Crawford.
There you go. So then why are you going to take on a beast like Boots when you don't have to?
Because, no, look, you can make Boots Ennis versus Crawford on pay-per-view. It doesn't do particularly well, but you can make more money fighting Boots Ennis than you will fight Santillan. Yes, significantly more. You definitely can do that. But Crawford does not seem at all motivated to fight Boots Ennis now or anytime. And that's not unusual.
I don't blame him.
It's not unusual. Like, older champions don't generally fight younger champions. That's sort of how it goes in boxing at any weight class. So if he doesn't want to fight Boots Ennis and these lesser tier fights that you're talking about aren't interested. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the fight is. Like, do you wait for Tim Zhu to heal up this summer and do that fight with him anyway? Like, you kind of sell it like this guy was going to win before this whole thing happened with Fedor. Do you look at another title holder at 154? I mean, I think Crawford right now is in a very difficult position because there isn't a money fight out there for him. Even Jermell Charlo right now, Sergio, like, that's not a money fight anymore. No. The way Jermell Charlo fought against Canelo Alvarez, that is not that diminished Jermell in probably the worst possible way. So I guess my answer is, I don't know, man. Like, I just don't know what the solution is. If he's not going to fight Boots, he might be out of the ring for quite some time.
I just told you the solution and you're not listening.
The solution's bad.
No, because I've been inactive. I'm the king of inactivity. And I could tell you, if I was in a Bud Crawford, level, bring back the trumpets.
The king of inactivity.
There you go. But I am, though. And I could tell you, if I could take it back, I would take a stay busy fight against a fighter that's not going to give me my minimum. And I had a high minimum at that point. I would
Bud's
take
minimum's got to be like $4 million.
I get it, but you got to take half that. So if you can get a $2 million fight fighting a stay busy fight,
I don't think he's
getting
out of bed for that. I just don't.
Well, he's going to have to at 36 years old, man, because time's not on his side. And as talented as he is and pound for pound great, future Hall of Famer, he needs to have one of these stay busy fights. Every great has done it. Every great, I mean, Canelo Alvarez fought Avni Yildirim in between fights.
That was a little bit different. That was, I'm fighting because Canelo fought in December, February, and then May. Like, that was a 6 month stretch or a 5 month stretch where he fought three times.
All right, Anthony Joshua has fought Kubrat Pulev in between. That's
on the comeback trail, though.
Man, I can keep going here. All right, every champion has these guys that stay busy fights. They're respectable.
You take stay. If you were to take a stay busy fight, you take it in December of last year, like 6 months after your win, December, January. You don't take it a year later. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To me. You are asking me, the former champion, the questions. I am responding
your
to your
questions.
Your answer
was Giovanni and if you don't like, Santillan.
And if you don't like my responses, then why don't you have the Chris Mannix podcast with my guest, Chris Mannix, every week. We'll see how many listeners are there.
Does excellent numbers. I don't
Santillan or Rocha makes all the sense
Rocha
in the world.
Rocha doesn't make any sense right now. Rocha's okay. On the comeback trail. Santillan, undefeated.
Put that
I
fight in Texas,
sell.
California, Nevada, or Arizona. It'll fill the house. It will do well.
Look, if he's willing to take $2 million, $3 million, probably. Yeah, I could see that, but I just don't think Bud's looking to take that. I mean, he made, eight figures for that fight against Errol Spence.
He's not going to make eight figures or four figures in his next fight. He's not going to make that anymore. That was a rarity.
On that, I think we agree. I want to get your take on David Benavidez, who has been out there recently kind of pushing back on the narrative that Canelo Alvarez has been floating, that doesn't really need David Benavidez, that David Benavidez doesn't bring a whole lot to the table, that he would only fight him for $150 million. Benavidez has said something to the effect of, Canelo needs to start showing him, David Benavidez, some respect. Do you buy that? Do you think Canelo has been disrespectful of David Benavidez?
Canelo is one of the most classiest, respectful champions in boxing. I'm a big fan of David Benavidez, but I have no clue what he's talking about there. There's a lot of dangerous up-and-coming undefeated champions that don't get the recognition by the guys that have been on top for a long time, and that's just the way things go. It's not just in boxing, in every form, in any career. You got to pay your dues. Canelo has paid his dues in this game since he was 15 years old. He got to where he is doing it the old-fashioned way, you know, blue-collared way, bleeding for it. Now he's the head honcho in charge. He's the pound-for-pound king. He demands where he fights. He goes wherever you go. He goes wherever he wants, and wherever he roams is where people follow. David Benavidez wants that status. He will probably one day get that status, but he can't say it's disrespectful for a king to not look your way. That king earned his right. He's allowed to walk in the manner he wants. And David Benavidez needs to understand that he needs to keep knocking out guys the way he's doing it, like he did against Andrade and beating down Caleb Plant and all these other fighters that they put in front of him. Dude, he's doing just that. He will be the next star. He's in line to be the Mexican monster and pay-per-view star. I guarantee you, he has the look, the backing, the following, the style, and the knockout power. This man will be a star. But don't expect to, you know, get some of that glimmer of Canelo's star and call it that he's disrespecting or hating. No, that man is just doing, he paved his own way, and he calls his own shots. David Benavidez needs to understand that and respect that himself.
Everything Canelo Alvarez is doing is straight out of the Floyd Mayweather playbook. It's exactly what Floyd did. Floyd made his bones as pretty boy over the years, right? He effectively became a Hall of Fame fighter as Pretty Boy Floyd, a multi-division world champion, fought some of the best at 130, 135, 147, 154 when he beat Oscar De La Hoya back in 2007. And after that, he started looking for highest risk and lowest reward. That's what he did. And I think that's what we're seeing now with Canelo Alvarez. Floyd Mayweather, for really 5 years, put off the Manny Pacquiao fight. He didn't want anything to do with Manny Pacquiao for 5 years until that fight was so big that the money for it was so enormous that Floyd agreed to get in the ring with him. That is exactly what Canelo is doing there. He's not being subtle about it. He's saying, I'll fight the guy. Give me $150 million. Now, I don't think someone's going to write a check for $150 million, but if David Benavidez beats Vostick in June, and then let's say hypothetically in November, December, he beats the winner of Beterbiev and Bivol, which I think he can. Like, I don't think it's an easy fight, but I think it's a winnable fight for David Benavidez. How much bigger is Canelo Benavidez this time next year than it is right now? I mean, right now, Canelo could probably make $40, $50, $55 million to fight Benavidez. If David Benavidez is the undisputed light heavyweight champion this time next year, the fight with Canelo is massive. Maybe so big that the Saudis turn around and write a check. But it's certainly big enough to put that fight in Allegiant Stadium in Vegas, to do a pay-per-view that will go well over a million buys. Like, I just think Canelo is doing what Floyd did brilliantly. He is being a businessman first, and it makes much better business sense to fight David Benavidez next year than it does right now.
I thought you were going to quote Jay-Z right there and give me a Jay-Z line. I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. Mm-hmm. Let Canelo handle his business. Damn. Or chingao. But no, I agree with you. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that fight at Raiders Stadium in Las Vegas on Cinco de Mayo weekend or September, Mexican Independence Day, between Canelo and Benavidez? It doesn't get bigger. That's as big as it gets in pay-per-view numbers, in the casual fan and the hardcore boxing fan. I'm salivating right now, Maddox. Give me a napkin. That fight right there is a historic fight. And I already told you who I think wins that fight. I think a lot of people will favor Benavidez to win that round. But can you imagine finally seeing Canelo on the back foot, you know, hurt or bleeding or dropped or have to come adversity like a lot of great fighters have to do it. In order for Canelo to win that fight, we're going to have to see him come back through adversity like the old greats have, the Ali, the Leonards, the Durans. Canelo will have to prove that against Benavidez, a younger, stronger, faster, taller, longer reach champion. That will be beautiful to watch, and I hope and wish and pray that it happens, and it happens on this side of the pond or the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, that can be called a pond. And think about the finances of it, too. Like, I have been told that Canelo can earn in the neighborhood of $45 million for fighting Jaime Munguia. So let's say that the stuff Samson Lukowicz is throwing out there is true, that they're offering Canelo $55 million to fight him. To Canelo Alvarez, $10 million isn't all that much.
Nope.
Right? Like, if you can fight Jaime Munguia in a fight that you are going to be 3-1, 4-1 favorite in and make $45 million, mm-hmm, why would you fight a much tougher fight against David Benavidez just to make $55 million? I think this is all about business. I just think it's all about how much money Canelo can get someone, whether it's a network, a foreign government, to pay him to fight David Benavidez. Because Canelo was right there watching Floyd Mayweather do his thing when Floyd put off and put off and put off the Pacquiao fight. How many people were killing Floyd? I was one of them. Killed Floyd for years for not fighting Manny Pacquiao when he was right there in his weight class. But Floyd was right. He was right to do it. He put it off, and then he walked away with like $300 million or whatever it was to fight Manny Pacquiao that time. That is exactly what Canelo's trying to do.
And then he made $100 million-plus to fight MMA fighter in, yep, Conor McGregor.
That's what Canelo might do too.
With that popularity and having that type of success, you know, yeah. I mean, you can harp on a fighter or an athlete all you want, but you haven't seen the vision yet. You haven't seen it all the way to the end. Most of the time, there's mistakes, but sometimes, like Mayweather, like Canelo, and certain greats, they get it right, and history has to respect that. Whether you like it or not, you have to respect it. And it's all about, are they Hall of Fame fighters? Absolutely. Yes. Are they making a killing in money? Yes. Generational money? Yes. And in the end, it was a beautifully beautiful career that they had inside the ring and outside the ring as businessmen, and they're ever able to carry it on to the end. Anthony Joshua was another one. There's so many of them, and it's rare that you get to see boxers at that side of the spectrum. Normally we see the opposite of that, you know, broke, you know, drooling, can't spell their names, you know, punch drunk, lost everything. And we love to see sometimes a successful ending to that bad tale.
It's a mistake to do this for every fight, because a lot of fights don't happen because of this. And frankly, the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight almost didn't happen because Pacquiao lost to Marquez during all that. But sometimes it does. And I think the case of Canelo Benavidez, with Canelo, you know, likely to win on May 4th, if he fights in September, he's probably going to fight someone else. He's likely to beat. Benavidez is probably going to have the toughest test in front of him. If he winds up fighting the winner of Beterbiev versus Bivol, he could lose. But if he wins, monster fight. Vegas, Allegiant Stadium.
It doesn't get bigger.
Massive pay-per-view. Nine figures on the table potentially for both those guys.
It does not get bigger. Both of them will sell. They'll break records pay-per-view.
I agree. All right, we're going to be in Vegas on Saturday. The new Fontainebleau Hotel, Sergio. Have not seen it. Supposedly really nice, brand new, just opened. And they will be having a boxing event there. Richardson Hitchens headlining that show against Gustavo Lemos. Hitchens, to me, is already one of the best pure boxers in the sport. Like, his talent is legit. He is a big, tall, rangy, 140-pounder. He has an incredible jab. He is accurate with his power shots. What he has been missing up until this point is a little bit of that killer instinct, a little bit of that finisher in him. Like, you look at his last fight against Jose Zepeda. A comprehensive, one-sided beating, near shutout against Zepeda. But at the end of that fight, and you were there in Orlando with me, I remember seeing a wounded Zepeda in front of Hitchens over the last few rounds, and Hitchens not really doing anything to press the action and go for the stoppage. And that's been kind of a theme over the course of his career. As much talent as anyone in boxing, but doesn't go for stoppages. So my question for you is, going up against a fighter like Lemos, someone that is undefeated but largely untested, who is an aggressive fighter, who's probably going to try to beat Hitchens' face all night, does he need to do more than just win this fight on Saturday?
No, I don't know how many times. I don't know how many times I need to repeat and remind you that boxing is all about winning, 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 winning. Richardson Hitchens knows this. He doesn't care about critics like you or anyone else writing bad about him, because as long as he keeps winning and maintaining that zero, he's bound to cash in that zero for a check full of zeros. Okay, so I'm telling you right now, Richardson Hitchens doesn't need to look for the knockout or take chances as long as he keeps winning. And the thing about having that much talent is that you can keep fighting after that, because you're not getting touched, you're not getting hit, you're not getting cut, you're not getting injured. So you can keep climbing the ranks the safe way, the smart way, the calculated way, instead of getting into wars. Now, you're saying take a risk like in the Zepeda fight. Zepeda's hard to knock out, and he's a big puncher.
That may be wrong time to say Zepeda's hard to knock out, since he just got flattened by Dalton Smith in his last fight.
He's a big puncher, and it was before that Dalton Smith fight, but he's a big puncher. He's a southpaw.
One fight before.
And he dominated. Hitchens dominated that fight.
Knocked out by Regis Prograis. How many more examples do you want to know of this guy getting knocked out? He apparently is not that hard to knock out.
Prograis, it took him, 11 rounds, whatever it was. Hitchens is not there yet, and he's not in the championship level. So let him cross the finish line and start, let him become a champion, start getting that championship money. Then maybe he can start taking chances if he wants to become a pay-per-view fighter one day and get the big fights. Because then, yes, once you're a champion, you have to take it to another gear if you want the bigger names. Because then you're going to be, one of these fighters like Demetrius Andrade that was a champion for who knows how long and no one would look his way because he wasn't going for knockouts.
It's a great example. You are making my argument for me. Demetrius Andrade, all he did was win, and it wasn't until last year at age, 34, that he fought his first former world champion.
And he made a boatload of money fighting all these fighters that no one's heard of.
And he got lucky to an extent because he got early money from Eddie Hearn when Eddie Hearn signed with the Zone. Hey, that was as much about...
You heard what Richard Hitchens said yesterday at the press conference, straight to Eddie's face. Man, this is free money. I feel like I'm picking your pocket. That was great by Hitchens, saying he thinks this is going to be easy money. Lemos is easy money, and he's looking at it like, hey, man, I'm robbing the bank. I won't be surprised if Hitchens comes out in a ski mask just like Mayweather did for Pacquiao and McGregor. This is a heist. Stick him up, Mannix. Stick him up, because I think Hitchens is on the right path and he's doing the right thing.
Yes, but Andrade could not get a top-level opponent in with him because top-level opponents didn't see a lot of upside there. They didn't see pay-per-view upside there. They didn't see dollar figures when they fought Demetrius Andrade. They saw a slick southpaw that wasn't willing to engage for much of the fight. And that's the problem that Richardson Hitchens could run into over the next couple of years.
Why is it Hitchens' fault that he looks doesn't take chances?
Let me just be clear.
They're the ones that need to break that jab, break that distance, break that range.
He's got a very good jab. It's extremely hard to do.
Give Hitchens credit.
Sergio, nobody is telling him, nobody is suggesting that Richardson Hitchens should be Arturo Gatti. Nobody is saying that. It's more about, hey, when you got a guy that is defeated, and you know, not that you know this part of it, but like a guy like Zepeda had to know, like going to the 10th round, that he was down 9-0. That's got to be deflating. He got hurt several times in the 10th and 11th rounds. If you see a hurt fighter like that, don't go for the one-punch knockout, but swarm him. Throw a bunch of punches. Score a knockout that way. I need to see that from Richardson Hitchens. Because you know what, Sergio? It isn't just about winning. Boxing is a television show. And if nobody watches a television show, the television show gets canceled. If nobody's watching you box, or nobody's buying tickets for you to box, to watch you box, then you are not going to be on television, and you are not going to be headlining main events. You weren't, and you, by the way, you didn't have great power, but you understood what it meant to be on television. Even in the ring, lick the blood off your glove, be a little theatrical out there. You know, you knew what it took to be television friendly. That's all I want from Hitchens. Be a little more television friendly as he's winning these fights.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you that. Yeah, I didn't have the power of the knockouts, but I had television success with the reality show, and I had a little, you know, Latin snake come out of me. You know, Mark Burnett on The Contender urged me to do more of that. Sergio, I like it when you do that bravado. You stick out your chest.
What accent are you doing right now?
It's a British accent. Okay. I need more of that. The bravado, the pound your chest and the more machismo. It's good television. And I always remember that from Mark Burnett. And I carried that on the rest of my career. And I also remember watching guys like Roberto Duran. You know, you'll do that stance after every round. And that's when a little bit of a showmanship come in, and you can't plan that. It just comes out. With Hitchens, that's his character, man. He's been so successful doing this as an Olympian, as an undefeated professional, beating former champions, beating contenders, and he's making the money he's always dreamed of making now, and they're keeping him busy. So if he can keep dominating on one of the best jabs in boxing, which is Hitchens' jab now, and being disciplined and responsible and not getting hit, not getting cut, he's going to walk over these for guys like Lemos and Zepeda and all these other fighters. Let him get to the big fights. Now, if he gets to the big names, and mind you, it's a loaded division, so the big names not only going to bring the big money, but they're going to bring the big danger. And come big danger, jab's not going to be enough. So Hitchens is going to have to show more in those fights against Teofimo, against Tank, against Matias, against everybody at 140. It's going to remind me of Ray Ford, Mannix. Remember what you and Grisham used to say about Ray Ford? No, he needs to show us more. He's not going to do this, not going to do that. He doesn't knock guys out. Matchroom is not going to give him opportunities. Guess what? That's Matchroom's first U.S. champion.
And how did he become champion?
By taking a big opportunity, and he didn't get the knockout. Ray Ford didn't get the knockouts up to that fight.
He got the knockout in that fight, though.
Yeah, but look at what he had to go through.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about Ray Ford in the aftermath of that. That was a big moment for him.
Okay, can you put it on record that you were one of his biggest critics about not going for the knockout?
Because I was in Phoenix with you.
Yes or no?
I'm saying
yes. And who was one of his proponents vouching for him? Me. Because I know talent, Mannix, and I know that Hitchens
has... Okay, but don't rewrite history here, because we were both in Phoenix in that bizarro Danny Jacobs, Julio Cesar Chavez fight. And on that card was Ray Ford against Edward Vasquez, and he lost that fight. But he got a gift decision by the judges. That's when I started to turn down on Ray Ford. To Ray's credit, he made some changes to his team.
He did.
He's worked a lot harder. And in that fight against, what was it, Otterbeck? I'm going to butcher his last name, so I'm not going to say it. In that fight, the boxing wasn't working. So he took the fight to the guy and then wound up knocking him out with a spectacular finish at the end of the 12th round. He took the fight to him. Now I want to see more of that from Hitchens. You got a hurt fighter in front of you?
You think Ray Ford planned that? No.
No, he made an adjustment.
It was his opponent's aggression, and it was the fact it was a close fight. And it was another fact that a lot of people choose the other guy to win that fight. Ray Ford is a special talent, just like Hitchens. Hitchens is a special talent. They have an above normal, above average, extraordinary fight IQ, and it starts with that. And then it trickles down to discipline, and they don't go out of character. And then it goes to the attributes of speed, and then it goes to the amateur background, and then it gets into toughness and power and matchmaking and promoting and all that. But they have been so successful not getting out of character that they're not going to change that. And that's a discipline that not many have. And I think they should keep doing that until they get the championship level fights, they get to a world title, then they could have more options on their table and maybe take more chances.
Well, fortunately for Hitchens, and against a guy like Lemos, he's going to have a guy right in his face all night long. And if he wins, he's probably going to become the mandatory for Subriel Matias's IBF title, which is another fighter that's going to be right there engaging
Love
with
him.
So he's going to have to show his stuff in those particular fights. All right, last thing. Also on this card is Diego Pacheco, who you and I both love. Like one of the best prospects in boxing, 23 years old, top five ranked by three of the four sanctioning bodies. He's got a fight coming up on this weekend against Sean McCallum, or McCallum, I'm going to say that name one more time. He's got a fight coming up this weekend. Pacheco is right there on the doorstep of a world title shot. Last year, he knocked out Marcelo Caceres. That was a gatekeeper type of win, biggest win in terms of names of Pacheco's career. My question for you is this the year that you think Diego Pacheco is ready for that world title shot?
McCallum.
And
you're thinking of
McCallum,
a 12-year-old Scotch McCallum or something.
Thinking of Mike McCallum, the body snatcher.
No, to answer your question, I think yes, but he's not going to get Canelo. Canelo has all the belts. So he's not going to get that fight unless he beats a Berlanga. So I think if it's a undisputed eliminator to face the king, and that's Canelo, Berlanga has to fight a fighter like Pacheco or, you know, maybe someone along that line. But look, they talk about Berlanga fighting Canelo, and I think Pacheco doesn't deserve Canelo, and neither does Berlanga. But if they fight each other, then maybe they deserve a crack at the king.
That's not going to happen. You know.
Okay,
that.
So then to answer your question, no, he's not going to get that fight because he's not ready. He hasn't evolved enough. He hasn't won a world championship. Yes, he's the goods. And yes, they are moving him brilliantly because I wasn't a fan of Diego Pacheco his first two fights. Chris Mannix, we've called all his fights entire
career. So you were right about Ray Ford and wrong about Diego Pacheco.
I never said he wasn't going to be championship material, but I didn't think much of him.
Yeah.
And now my opinion, just like his style, has evolved. This the guy is a monster, man, at 168, but he's unfortunately in a division where there's only one king. One undisputed king, and that's Canelo. And Canelo's not going to fight. He's not going to look backwards and fight an up-and-comer in Pacheco. So unless those belts get available, then maybe he can fight someone else. Maybe he can fight Munguia after Canelo fights him. Maybe he can fight someone else. If it's not Berlanga. Berlanga,
give you a name then.
Berlanga needs to step up too, by the way. Let's not just say Pacheco.
I think is going to stay on ice until Canelo decides what he wants
to do. He ain't getting that fight. Berlanga's not getting that fight.
Don't be shocked if he does.
I'm not gonna question Keith Conley
here.
No, Keith Conley gets the job done. I give him credit.
Don't give Keith Conley props in the show. We don't do
that
in the show.
Derevchenko made a killing thanks to Keith Conley, so I got to give him credit.
Derevchenko has made some good money. Maybe that's the guy for him. Sergey Derevchenko at 168 pounds. Derevchenko would probably take a fight like that. But I think a better fight and a main event type of fight is Bektimir Melikuziev. How about Diego Pacheco?
There you go, Mannix.
Against Bektimir.
There
now, Beck,
you go.
From what I'm told, Beck is going to be on this April 20th card, I think. So he's going to fight a couple weeks after Diego Pacheco, so the timing kind of lines up. We know that Bektimir will fight anybody. He's always proven that. Pacheco, Melikuziev, two top 10 ranked 168-pounders. Sign me up for that, because that is an offensive, just a display from both those guys.
I still would want a more popular name, but yeah, a fight friendly fight.
You can't name a more popular name. There's nobody out like realistic. Like Caleb Plant is not taking that fight. That's what I'm
thinking
about.
You know, I'm thinking about those lines.
There are two guys I that jump off the page, right? One is Melikuziev because he's kind of known in the U.S. partly for wrong reasons because he got knocked out by Gabe Rosado, but he's a known commodity, going to get good exposure on this Garcia Haney card. The other guy that jumped to mind was Eric Bazinian, who a lot of people don't know. But he's also highly ranked by all the sanctioning bodies.
Melikuziev makes more sense.
Okay, but Bazinian's fighting next week too. So you got another guy that's kind of right there timing-wise. So what I think for Pacheco this year, whether it's summer, early fall, give him a top 10, top 5 rated super middleweight that's available. To me, that's Melikuziev and that's Eric Bazinian. Those are two guys I think that would make a lot of sense.
No, I think they're moving him right. Just like Ray Ford, you got to be patient. He's going to get his time in the
sunny. Ray Ford, though, took a fight that nobody really wanted. Like,
okay, well, Pacheco's going to have to do that too then. Pacheco might have to do that.
I mean, Melikuziev's kind of it. Like, that's,
there you go. It's going to be one of those type fights where it's the risk outweighs the reward, but if he passes that test, then you know he gets the title shot, and I think Pacheco's going to he's already evolved into something that I didn't think he can be. And this kid is the truth. He is the truth. He's a power puncher. He's tall. He's lanky. He's somewhat of a Kelly Pavlik type, and he does it with more
good
volume.
Comparison.
Yeah, man, this kid's a beast. I love watching him. And his last fight, you know, not only did he get the knockout, but he packed the house, and he's getting a following, and they're moving him and promoting him right. I think Diego Pacheco is a future ticket seller and hands down a champion, guaranteed.
Yeah, the champion part. This is where I wish Canelo would just give up the belts, because Canelo Alvarez doesn't need the belts. Like, no. He's not defined by those four titles. And you know that if you have a title on the line, it makes makes making a fight a lot easier, right? Like, whether it's because you can force a purse bid for it or because guys are more likely to take on tough challenges with a world title on the line. I would just love to see Canelo, after this fight against Munguia, say, you know what? I'm going to keep the Ring Magazine belt. I'm the Ring Magazine 168-pound champion. I don't got to pay a sanctioning fee for that. So instead of giving up like $1.5 million or whatever it is, he's got to pay for those belts. Why don't you just have one belt and you'll still be considered the king of the 168 pound division?
Well, I mean, in order to be the king, you have to have the crown, the robe, and the chair. You know, those are his.
He has that. He doesn't need the belts anymore, though.
He needs the belts. It's the image. It's the fact that I'm the champion of the world, you know, and there happens to be so many belts, and I own all of them because I'm the man.
You got to pay for them.
He's making $50 million. He can pay a little bit of money. I mean, you need the belts in order to show your regality. No, is that the word, regality?
Not really. But
regal? Regalness?
Did Floyd Mayweather need the belts? I don't even remember what belts Floyd held in his career. He was never the undisputed champion.
No, he was never the undisputed champion, but he always held a multi.
He always held multi, a belt. No, he held belts. A belt. He fought Victor Ortiz for his belt.
And he always brought him to the ring, everyone carrying them.
Those are old belts.
He carried that undisputed image, and he sold himself well. Canelo doesn't have Mayweather's talking abilities, but you know he handles his business in the ring, and he has the hardware to prove it. So that's all that matters, man.
All right, can you try not to die in Vegas on Friday? You know, as you try to catch up when we get there, what do we land, like 8 o'clock? Like, can you try not to?
No, I'm responsible. I'm responsible with my drunkenness. and by the way,
there's a commercial.
And by the way, I'm reading Dostoevsky on the flight over there. The Gambler, baby. Red.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.